The portfolio doctors are Dan Osgood and Stephen Bick, who are investment advisor representatives of their respective registered investment advisor firms, ACAS LLC and Cottingham Management Company LLC. The opinions expressed by the portfolio doctors and guests on this radio show are their own and do not reflect the opinions of this radio station. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information presented is for educational purposes only. Moreover, no listener should assume that any discussions or information presented serves as the recipient of or a substitute for personalized advice from ACAS LLC, Cottingham Management LLC, or from any other investment professional and is not intended as an offer of solicitation for sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. ACAS LLC and Cottingham Management LLC are not law or accounting firms, and no portion of this presentation should be interpreted as legal, accounting, or tax advice. Information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for any listener. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation.
You're listening to The Portfolio Doctors on ESPN 1700. Your financial future depends on making sound investment decisions. Make sure you get accurate information and a weekly checkup from a source you can trust, Portfolio Doctors. Now, live in studio, here's Dan Osgood and Steve Bick, the Portfolio Doctors.
Welcome. Happy Friday, everyone. It is the Portfolio Doctors. I'm Dan Osgood.
I'm Steve Bick.
Glad you could join us.
Thanks.
Another wonderful day here in San Diego. Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah,
it's the once a year storm watch 2014. Is that what's going on out there still?
Yeah, well, we needed the rain, but yeah. I think we're getting the entire year in one weekend.
That's generally how it works around here. Mm. So just be careful out there if you're listening and you're driving. Just don't be texting.
That's right.
Just looking at the markets today, the week overall went pretty well if you're long the market.
Sure.
And all-time highs for the S&P on the close. NASDAQ hit a 14-year high today,
right. Which
is still well off its all-time high.
Right.
But that's definitely progress.
Right.
And I believe the Dow is teetering around highs every day.
Everything's high.
So it's interesting. I think a lot of that got some acceleration from Janet Yellen coming out and speaking earlier this week.
Right.
She just said we're taking note of some of the economic releases that aren't as wonderful as anticipated. What do you make of that?
Well, essentially, she's just saying that she's going to continue to print money and to support the economy with their easy money policies for an extended period. I mean, you know, they were starting to taper, and now she's pretty much saying that they're not going to taper quite as aggressively as they were before.
Well, that one of her exact quotes was, they are not on a preset course, meaning
right. Every
meeting we're not going to just remove another $10 billion
right. In
funding, which I think is opening up the door to them saying, oh, we're going to stop for now.
And yeah,
reverse. That opens the door to the possibility they could reverse and start pumping more money back in.
Well, the interesting part for me is just you've been pumping money into the economy since 2008. You've pumped, $3-4 trillion in. You're still adding $65 billion a month. Unemployment is still 6.5% if you agree with their numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a stock market that is at all-time highs with a weak economic base. So what they've done is it hasn't worked, really, because if they really had done a good job, we would have a strong economy and low unemployment, and they wouldn't be printing money.
Right.
So they're continuing to throw money at something that isn't really working and continuing to do it, and the only beneficiary, really, is the stock exchange.
Right.
So why keep doing that?
I think when you run for president, we'll get this as your campaign slogan, that you're going to continue the printing, but you're going to pass that money to every citizen of the United States.
And, there you go.
And watch that make the economy just boom.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, what are there, 300 million and we've printed 3 trillion? So, you know, what's that? That's $1,000.
100 grand a piece?
Huh?
100 grand a piece?
Is it that much?
I don't know.
No, I don't
how many zeros are there? How many commas?
Yeah, exactly.
But it doesn't matter. They proved going clear back to George W. Bush when they just gave that little tax rebate to everybody. That was the stimulus that got the economy rolling.
No, exactly right.
And that was just a few hundred dollars.
Yeah. No, I know. No, exactly right. So I don't know. It's just, it's more of the same. Mm-hmm. But we didn't expect anything different when Yellen was voted in. So
right. That's why it shouldn't be a surprise. And I kind of find it a little bit interesting that the markets are really reacting, other than the fact that she's reiterating that we're not going to do this preset thing. This is not already carved out, and this is exactly what we're following. We're going to continue to monitor, and we're going to adjust as we see fit.
Right.
Where if we see the stock – they've already proven if we see the stock market start to drop,
all of a sudden
they change. So,
no, I know.
And I have to believe they're going to continue to do the same thing.
Well, it's also interesting because you saw the 10-year, the yield on the 10-year. I mean, that was just over 3%, and that's just come – crashing down the yield. I mean,
the 265 today,
something like that. It just actually went past. I just missed it, but it's somewhere around there. But I mean, the movement on the 10-year note, the actual price of the 10 years have just gone through the roof.
Right.
So I mean, and just a few weeks or months ago, people going, "Oh, this is it. 10 years going to 5%. Mm-hmm. Interest rates are going to spike. Buy a house right now." And there was just no way they could do that then.
Right. And I mean, rates coming back down. This is now opening the window again for a lot of people to be able to afford houses.
Well, yeah, you would
think.
That's
temporarily halted because rates got just high enough to make those payments.
Which we joked about before on a different show where it's like, mm-hmm. my gosh, rates go to just over three, and people suddenly can't afford to buy houses.
Right.
I mean, how low? And that's just nuts, isn't it? I mean, how weak is the economy when people can't get a job strong and good enough to be able to support 3% interest?
Or how out of whack is the real estate market?
The price of the housing.
Yeah, that's the other side of it. Here in Southern California, the premium you pay for the fact that this is our first rainy weather in the last 6 months, if not year, that's unfortunately the premium you have to pay.
Well, yeah, and you've got a lot of people moving out, you know. They can't afford to stay here anymore, particularly with the high state taxes and the mess that we're in.
Well, I'm still waiting for the feedback and all the stories you're going to hear as people are now just starting to do their taxes and the impacts of the increased state taxes, all the new quiet taxes you're going to be subject to tied to the Affordable Care Act and just the capital gains changes. There's a lot of tax dollars getting taken out.
Right.
That people are not aware of, that they're going to be shocked, I think, when tax time gets going full speed.
Hopefully not me.
Hopefully not me as well.
It's that same thing. It's everyone but me, right?
Right.
But no, you're dead right. I mean, that's all going to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly maybe you haven't set aside enough and you suddenly owe.
Right.
I mean,
and that could be possibly the catalyst that causes a market to finally roll over, even with this funding. Maybe that's the thing that people say, wait a minute, I can't afford these things any longer.
I don't know.
I have to
keep
this money.
I mean, you're right. There is going to be a catalyst, but I think it's a loss of faith in what the Fed's doing that's going to be that catalyst. And it could be anything that makes that. It could be the tax thing.
Right.
I mean, you're never sure what that catalyst is going to be. But at some point, people just go, you know what? This is all just a bunch of nonsense. It's just a pile of house of cards. And I'm not going to play this game anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you're never sure what that trigger is going to be. I mean, think back to, what was it, 07, 08, when housing was going up, up, up. I mean, my word, everyone had to pile into houses, right? There was no end in sight. You kept hearing people saying this is the new age. Housing's going to go up forever because everyone needs a place to live. You got to have a roof over your head, you know? Now, and then when you know, on the flip side, in the gold things, it's like, well, you can't eat it. You can't touch it, you know, you can't whatever it, all the other bear things, and so it gets pounded for a while until at some point the supply demand curve shifts, right. And then it turns around.
Well, in that housing bubble, if you want to call it a bubble, you just like you said, it was exactly the same thing back during the tech bubble,
yeah.
Back in 2000.
Man,
I was hearing the exact same things from people. Oh, the stock market, it's never going to go down again, and
it's
what
a new
was
era.
The book, The Great Boom Ahead.
Yep.
That just outlined, oh, with technology coming, there's no reason the market's just going to go, 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 go. It's not going to go down ever again. And guess what? It did. Same thing happened with housing. Things get out of control. And as soon as you hear people saying those types of things, that's when you really need to start being cautious.
Right.
And start reevaluating what you're doing and say, hey, wait a minute. Does this make the most sense? Derek, when I was on his show earlier today, he mentioned something. He heard an ad on the radio when he was coming in, and it was the company was advertising, "We believe silver is going to double in price in the next 12 months. So contact us to buy silver." And it's one of those scary things. Is that which will get into kind of what we're talking about, a leading indicator or lagging indicator? Is that, okay, we're already late, but we're going to try to sell this to these poor suckers that don't know what's coming? Or is it, hey, here's an opportunity where in this day and age, you probably want to be more cautious and say, why is someone advertising on an expensive radio show to sell silver instead of just investing in it themselves or holding on to maybe the supply they have if it truly is expected to double?
Right. No, I know.
Miss the game.
I remember there's a classic quote, which I actually put in my blog today. It's the quote says, you know, my broker urged me to buy a stock because it was going to double in price in the next 12 months. And he says, at my age, I don't even buy green bananas.
Yeah. Yep. I had a client say that to me. He was a 100-year-old man, and he was buying 30-year investments, 30-year municipal bonds.
Now, that is bullish.
And but he just wanted the highest yield he could. He just wanted the income. So, and he was leaving that to his kids, which if he was 100, they were 75 and 80. But
yeah, that's right. Huh?
But that was the first time I'd heard that, and that just cracked me up and gave me a different perspective into how to look at things.
Yeah. No, agreed. I mean, you've got to put a time horizon on these things, and sometimes that time never shows up.
Right. That's correct.
Heck, how much private equity have I done? And it seems like it's another year. Well, still trying to get there.
With private equity, it's always a five-year window. It's just you'd never know when the starting point is. You think it's when you first get involved, but a lot of times it's 5 years down the road before that five-year window starts.
Well, I think, and if you want to put that in perspective, it's five-year window from when you finally find the right business. Because, I mean, the business is constantly changing as you try and evolve, and then it's finally you find the right one, and it's 5 years from that moment in time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Today, on to bigger and better things, we are going to talk about forecasting, and we're not going to talk about the weather. It's going to be a different aspect.
Well, actually, we could. There is some forecasting that goes into it. We'll talk about
that. Not in San Diego. How often do you need a forecaster in San Diego? It's going to be sunny. It's going to be 70 degrees. Well, maybe the wind will blow.
Good thing we didn't pre-record this show. Yeah, we would have got that
that's
wrong.
That's correct. although they did say it was going to rain earlier this week, so I have to give them credit for the first time. And with forecasting, that's kind of a big topic. We're going to try to cover it in a lot of detail, talking about leading and lagging indicators, which I hinted at already, and what those are, and what types of things you can look for and give you an idea how to make good investment decisions. So stick around. We'll get into that in much more detail. Welcome back. You're listening to the Portfolio Doctors on ESPN 1700. My name is Dan Osgood.
Steve Bick.
Steve Bick in studio as well. If you need to get a hold of us, you can reach out via email. It's a great way. You can email me, Dan, at theportfoliodoctors.com. You can email Steve, at theportfoliodoctors.com. Or visit our website, theportfoliodoctors.com. And any questions or any topic we talk about, or if there's something that you've heard about on the news that you would maybe like us to cover, we will gladly look at any email. We'll respond back to you. And if it's a topic that looks like it'll make sense, we would definitely love to hear from anyone that wants to listen or learn about a specific topic that we might be able to give some educational tips to. So forecasting and not talking about the weather. What is the whole concept of forecasting, Steve?
Well, really what you're looking at in forecasting is you're just trying to get an understanding of what's going to happen next. I mean, that's essentially to all forecasting, right? And in economic forecasting is really no different. But I think it dates back, you know, hundred plus years where people started noticing there were certain cycles in the economy. So you had certain times when you expansionary cycle and then contracting, you know, recession or boom. And these cycles seem to repeat themselves over and over and over again. And so that was really the when econometrics was born. They was trying to capture in models these cycles. And since then, it's obviously become a massive, you know, influence on the markets, and also a massive database of knowledge that people have used to try and, as tools, try and predict what's going to happen.
Almost create, like, this is a pattern that we've seen happen. So
correct.
We can estimate that it's going to happen.
Yeah, and then people use it in terms of trying to then invest money, right? Mm-hmm. So you want to try and get an edge on the market any way you can. And if you can forecast correctly, I mean, think back to the housing, when the housing blew up. If you could have forecasted that, like Goldman Sachs did, and gone short the market, mm-hmm. you could have made tons and tons of money. Same thing when it hit the bottom. If you could have forecast that the economy was going to start recovering and that we were around about the bottom, and you could pick the bottom then, take, you know, invest heavily into stocks when the S&P was 600 odd, 700, you make a fortune. So that's why there's been such a growth in this econometrics, because people want to try and get an eye on the future. Now, that said, we all know that forecasting is just riddled with problems, and really it's a guess. No one truly can ever point to some specific reason as to why a forecast was right or wrong. And you and I have talked about this at length. I mean, you get these supposed gurus like, you know, Robini and
Abby Joseph Cohen.
And yeah, they get something right, and they get their little soapbox out, and they jump on CNBC and tell the world how great they are. And the world sort of listens to them for the next year or two until they realize that they only got one thing right ever, and the rest of their forecasts have been completely wrong. And then they suddenly gone. But then the new guy comes in, or woman, or whatever it is, that got the last thing right, and suddenly they're God. And really, there's just this hunger for someone to be able to tell people what's going to – I mean, people go to palm readers and, you know,
right,
create tarot cards and all that stuff. It's the same thing. What's mm-hmm. going to happen in my future? When will I die? Will I be happy? Will I make money? I mean, you know, it's the same thing when it comes to trying to forecast what's going to happen in the markets.
Right.
Other than, at least in the markets, there's some kind, as I've said before, the sort of wave theory where, you know, there's boom, bust, and back around we go. And as we've mentioned, there are certain indicators that people follow. And one of them is the leading lagging indicator. And I'm sure most people that are listening to the show have heard of those. They might not actually know what goes into those. So, you know, we can take each one of those apart. We will in a second. But ultimately, the leading indicators are the indicators that are pointing to where we're going.
Right.
And the lagging ones are pointing to where we've come from. So it's sort of, if you think of
rear view mirror.
Yeah, exactly. So you think of it like a snake, right? So, and it's sort of curving. So that if the leading indicators are pointing up, the lagging indicators are probably still pointing down. Mm-hmm. And then at the bottom of the trough of that sort of bend will be what's called the coincident indicators. They're in the middle. And then you see, and then they go up, and then at some point the leading indicators turn down and the lagging indicators are still going up, and, you know, round and round we go. So let's just have a quick look at what makes up the leading indicators. And there's 10 components, and we'll go through each one. The first one is average weekly hours manufacturing. So, you know,
These are indicators for the market as a whole.
This is what makes up the leading indicator index.
Okay.
So changes, gotcha. Of course. All right. So they're looking at average weekly hours. But it's interesting because they just look at the manufacturing sector, which is already so small in the U.S. that it's not really, you know. But in the past, that's where you have to understand some of these things need to be changed, but for whatever reason, we don't.
Yeah, these indexes need to be indexed.
Correct, exactly.
Updated on a regular
basis.
Yeah,
because think about it. They're trying to say, look, average weekly hours. If you see hours, the amount of hours worked is starting to grow, mm-hmm. then that gives you a sign that, you know, the manufacturer's a little bit more bullish. They've got more demand for their product, and they're normally a leading indicator, right? Because they suddenly people are having to work more. That means there's orders that they're trying to fill, and that, you know, the first thing they're going to do is make those guys work harder before they start bringing on new employees. The next one is the average weekly initial claims for unemployment insurance. Well, now we've talked about that at length, right?
Yes.
Because the unemployment numbers right now are looking good in terms of this metric, because unemployment's coming down like a stone, mainly because people are falling off the unemployment benefits.
Right, falling
not because they're getting jobs.
Right.
Well, that's going to influence this indicator because as long as it's improving, it means that the economy must be getting better because supposedly people are getting jobs, but we know that they're not because they're just losing their benefits. So the next one is manufacturers' new orders. In other words, how many new orders do the manufacturers get? And really, you know, when you're looking at manufacturers, it's also the ISM new orders index, which is the manufacturers index of what they're projecting. Okay, so both of those sort of make up the same thing. And then there's also non-defense capital spending. So all three of those really are just how much stuff is getting spent. Are there big orders? And we're talking about, you know, airplanes, machinery, equipment, that type. We're not talking about a manufacturer order for an Apple iPod or whatever. Mm. They don't really care about that. They're looking for big ticket items here. And that's really a sign that the economy is on strong footing. Then the next one is building permits, which is, you know, you're not going to build a house or pull building permits in a bad economy.
But in most economic recoveries, housing has led the way.
Yeah. Exactly.
So
that's
one
a good
of the
one.
Better ones to maybe try.
Correct. And we'll get back to that in a second. I'll just finish going through these. But the next one is stock prices, which has always been considered some kind of a look ahead. The credit index. So in other words, is credit expanding out there or is it contracting? If people are borrowing more money, they're more bullish. They think they're going to go and buy more stuff, right? And then you've got the interest rate spread, the 10-year treasury less the federal funds rate. So if that's the spread's getting bigger, in other words, people are, you know, interest rates are going up, that typically means that you're getting a stronger economy, right? And then your average consumer expectations. So consumers, are they bullish or bearish? That's what makes up the leading indicators. And what I want to just go back to your point, Dan, when you say that new building permits is a good one. That's exactly right. I mean, some of them, as we've mentioned, that one on unemployment is a bunch of nonsense.
Right. It's a manipulated number, so you can't put a lot of credibility behind
Correct.
It.
Correct. But these are things you can still, as an individual, get each of those changes. You can go to the Census Bureau and places like that to get these answers to what the change is and almost create your own indicator. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily have to listen to what the authorities say, because as we've seen, they're manipulating the numbers anyway themselves. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's a very good point. And just to go back before we get into the lagging indicators, the leading indicators are actually improving. So, you know, you've got a situation where the leading indicators are slowly improving, which means that, according to the Fed, the economy is on good footing. Right?
It should be getting better. And the stock market in general as a whole tends to be a leading indicator
Correct.
As well, because one, information is disseminated very quickly, and two, many stock prices, their price is comprised of anticipation of things happening.
Right.
And that is garnered from the CEO coming out and giving his quarterly report. Here's our earnings. Here's what we expect going forward.
Right.
And that's taking real data into account with what they're announcing for expectations.
Yeah. The one issue, though, with the stock exchange is that then you can also get situations where people factor in growth that never appears.
Right.
But that's sort of the same with all of these, you know. But the stock market in particular, as we've been discussing for, my goodness, years now, sometimes can get a little bit out of weight in terms of where the actual number should be. It could be slightly too high or too low, and so it can drag the...
It's like Apple could probably be a pretty good example from about a year and a half ago. It was flying like crazy, got mm-hmm. to 700, and then has since backed down and seems to have found a range right around 500.
Right.
It seems to be more accurate for their
business. No, exactly right. And the other issue with the stock exchange is that index constantly is changing. New companies are right. being put in. The weaker ones get tossed out. So it's always an index that's higher than it ever should be because it doesn't incorporate everyone that was in at the beginning.
Right.
So, I mean, those are issues in terms of leading and the stock market itself. It's so hard, but I guess that's the best effort at a leading indicator, if you think about it. What they're trying to do is assemble a group of indicators that show some kind of economic advancement or contraction ahead of time. People aren't going to hire people until they're a little bit more bullish on the mm-hmm. economy. Unemployment, if it is improving, shows that people are hiring. Increased hours at the work, that's going to help you, you know, grow. You're not going to make people work longer when you figure that there's a chance of making more money. And then building permits, like you said, I agree with that one completely. I mean, no one's going to go and start building places unless they have some kind of economic bullish outlook.
Yeah, too many developers have run into that time and time again, where they're really, I think, shell-shocked or snake-bitten on that over the last 30, 40 years, that they're not, especially in this day and age, they're not trying to do this way in advance of
right.
seeing good indications that their homes that they're going to build are going to be sold quickly.
And the one other thing on the building permit side is, as I've discovered trying to get my parking lot put into downtown, you don't get a building permit in an afternoon.
Right.
I mean, it can take me 2 years, and I think I can finally pull permits next week. So
congratulations.
Yeah, thanks a lot. But yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, to get that building permit, it's a lot of planning, a lot of time, a lot of effort. And so you don't just get a building permit issued. You know, you just don't just say, hey, I want to build tomorrow, and you go and get your permit.
Unless you know the right people.
I obviously do not. Yeah. I mean, but seriously, it's one of those things. So with building permits, that's also a little bit spotty, right? Mm-hmm. Because think about a builder. Let's say it takes on average a year to get that permit. You're trying to guess a year ahead where the economy's going.
A lot can happen.
I know. So a lot of builders get caught when they finally decide the economy's strong enough to handle my permit. And then they go and start building, but it's too late because they've missed the boat.
Right.
And I've got a friend who's got a lot of properties in Vista, and one of them is a hotel that he's thinking of converting to an apartment complex. But when he went down into the Vista building department, there's apparently building permits for something like 400 or 500 units to be built all in this mile or two that is Vista downtown. Wow. And he goes, Vista can't handle that. So the problem is you get everyone pulls back, right? Pulls back. No one builds. And then they all rush forward. And then there's a flood in the market, which now no one, you know, it's pointless building now. Your rents are going to go through the floor.
Right.
But, you know, that's the problem with this herd mentality and also the problem with some of these indicators.
Right. Well, stick around. We will get into detail more now on the lagging. What is indicating or telling you what has previously happened? Okay, welcome back. Steve, quick question for you. Breaking news. President Obama has announced there will be costs to Russian military intervention in Ukraine.
Yeah, well, I see they're saying that the Russians are going into the Crimea.
Is that a leading or a lagging indicator?
That's a leading. Holy smokes. If the Russians invade Ukraine and NATO invades the other, oh my word, that could be a 4,000-point down day in the Dow, maybe more.
That we'll have to keep an eye on that.
How much of a leading indicator do you need?
That's a scary prospect.
Well, that really is. But, you know, Ukraine was always going to be an interesting one because the Russians like that buffer. Mm-hmm. And the Ukrainians have been trying to get out of there forever. And, of course, NATO really wants Ukraine to join us.
Right.
That's a hot one.
Yeah. We will. We'll see how that plays out over the next week or two.
Right. So in the meantime, we'll jump to our lagging indicators.
Yes.
Yeah. So the average duration, the first one that makes up this lagging economic index is the average duration of unemployment. Wow. How long do you remain unemployed? Right. We must be an all-time record on that. I don't know how this lagging indicator is ever going to turn around.
Yeah, there's enormous numbers of people falling off that have been now unemployed for 2 years.
Yeah.
And that's why the numbers have been improving. So that can't even be an accurate No. Even though it's looking at old data, it can't be accurate.
No. No, absolutely not. And then the next one is inventories to sales ratio, manufacturing and trade. So what are the sales to the inventories? How much do you have built up in inventory versus how much are you selling? How many times are you flipping your inventory?
So that's indicating if sales are slowing down. So that one,
that one's
seems
pretty good.
To be a pretty good accurate one.
Labor cost per unit of output. If it's costing you more per unit of output, things are slowing. And if it's costing you less, things are picking up, right? Because you've got more hours worked.
Your profit margins are shrinking.
Better.
So
yeah,
there's
yeah.
The Apple example.
Yeah. The average prime rate, that's neither here nor there, to be honest. The prime rate is the lending rate.
Mm-hmm.
That's been stuck doing nothing for forever because the Fed just controls that, manipulates that. So that's really a manipulated number. Commercial and industrial loans. If you're borrowing more, you're expanding. If you're not borrowing, you're contracting. But the other issue with that is what's your ability to get access to those loans?
Right.
Now, the big boys have access to it and the small guys don't.
Right.
So I'm not
sure. That's been the challenge with the whole Fed bond buying program is
no, I know.
That money has not been filtering down to the people who could actually use the money and create growth.
Correct. The trickle-down effect.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the trickle-down effect just doesn't work. It trickles to the wrong places.
They've put up dams. It's like all the rivers up and down the coast, they have to have the ladders now so the salmon can get up because they dammed all these rivers.
All right.
That's literally the trickle down. They put up these dams and there's no ladder for the mom and pop and the small businesses to access.
No, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. And that's a problem because if the loans were freely flowing, that could be a better indicator, right? It
mm-hmm.
would help us. So the next one is consumer installment credit to personal income. So in other words, what's the debt-to-income ratio for the consumer?
An installment meaning ordinary loans, not credit card debt.
Correct. Exactly right, which means are you going to buy a house or a big-ticket item?
Maybe a car.
Yes. And then the consumer price index for services. So how much is the price going up on CPI? That used to be the indicator for inflation, but they decided that was too volatile, so they scrapped that and manipulated the inflation number to suit their purposes.
Let's take the accurate information and push it off to the side.
Exactly right.
Pick the numbers we like.
No, exactly. And then, just to round this out, to do the coincident economic indicators, which are the ones that are stuck in the middle, it's non-agricultural payrolls, personal income, industrial production, and manufacturing and trade sales, and that's about it. But, I mean, no one really, to be honest, I don't know many economists or anyone that really looks at those coincident indicators because it's who really cares?
Well, the one that you mentioned there that I've heard talk about but no one seems to put any emphasis on is the personal income.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the reality, personal income has dropped consistently over the last, 10 or 20 years.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's actually 20. We're sitting now at 1995 earnings levels,
okay,
if you factor it for inflation. So what we were earning in 95 is what we are basically earning today in terms of spending power. And you know, it's interesting because I was talking to my wife the other day, and she was just mentioning that she doesn't like to go out to eat anymore. And really what that is, it's a value proposition, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there value for money? Are you going out there and getting value for your money when you go out to eat? Now, 10 years ago, people used to go out to eat all the time,
right?
Because the portions were bigger. The cost was cheaper.
Reasonable.
Yeah, reasonable. So it was like, it's almost got to a point. I remember back in 95, it was almost cheaper to eat out than to cook it yourself at home. I mean, seriously, it wasn't quite, but I mean, it was pretty
close enough to where you didn't feel bad.
Yeah. Now, it's not necessarily even the cost per se. It is the cost, of course. That's part of it. But not only is it the cost, but it's just that value for money where you're getting a smaller portion. It's probably not the freshest stuff because the restaurants and they're trying desperately to keep costs down. So the way to do that is just, I mean, you've seen it in cereal boxes and that. You create this massive box, and inside it's only half filled up with cereal. So it gives the effect that it's still big, but it's not.
Bags of chips.
Yeah, bags of chips, all of that stuff. Where if they actually shrank the packaging, mm-hmm. you'd be able to easily tell, hey, hold on a second, you know, this isn't the same as what we were buying before, but the cost has gone up. So I think that over those 20 years, have you seen wages stagnate and yet inflation going up and the size of the portions going down? It's got to a point where it's tipped the scales away from value for money. Now it's the value for money's lost. So you have people saying, why are we not going to eat out? It's way cheaper to sit at home and cook the meal ourselves than to go out to a restaurant.
Right. My wife and I went out this week. We got a date night and was actually able to get out. And we sat down. My wife was looking at the menu, and she was looking just at the, you know, you always get the cocktail menu.
Right.
So she was looking to see if she wanted anything. And that was the first thing she said is it really worth this extra $2 or $3? And it drinks for $10 or $11.
Yeah. See, it's
nuts. Are you kidding? You can almost go buy a whole bottle of alcohol for what you might buy a couple drinks for in a restaurant. Yeah. And that's exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, that value for money has switched. And really, if you want to put that into an investing perspective, you need to invest or find companies or investments where the value for money is still there.
Right.
And I'm not talking about value for money in terms of, you know, take Apple as a great example. Apple was great value for money at one point because there were so many light years ahead of everyone in terms of technology. Now, is there really value for money when you could get a Galaxy 4 or whatever it is, or 5, I don't know, I'm not up with that, versus the iPhone 5, where they're basically the same product. In fact, the Galaxy might even be slightly edging ahead in terms of that, but it's $100 or $200 cheaper.
Right.
So you know that's therefore just in the value of money indication. You probably don't want to buy Apple stock. You'd rather go and get the Samsung stock. I mean, that's a very top of the iron draw type analysis, and I'm not telling anyone to do that. But I'm just saying these are types of analyses that people need to do, because if you can find that company that is showing value for money, people are going to migrate to that business.
Right. Especially the more difficult times are, that you really see the money flows that way.
Right. And on the staying on that subject, the companies that aren't providing value for money, you're going to see their margins get compacted.
Right.
Because they're going to have to. They're going to have to lower the price of those products, and that's going to mess up their gross margins, which is going to impact profitability, which ultimately impacts the stock price, unless you're in a buy everything stock market like we are now.
Right.
But I mean, you know, those are the types of things you've got to look for.
Well, that leads us into your Apple Samsung comparison. That leads us perfectly into an idea that flows along with this forecasting, is innovation.
Yeah.
Who are the innovators? Who are bringing these new products to the forefront? And generally, I don't know if you can say generally, but a lot of times those products come out, they're not well known. So there is a lot of value to that. Like when Apple first hit the market, like you said, they were so innovative with the iPhone. That was wow.
Yeah,
that was off the charts. No one had seen anything like that. So there was a lot of value there where everybody's caught up.
Well, you think of the innovators just going back a century or two. I mean, it started with the railroads, right? Mm-hmm. You built a railroad, you were going to the moon, yeah? Right. And the steel manufacturers, same thing. And then you had, I mean, think of Ford Motor Company. Right. What an innovator, you know? I mean, those, and you think of those stocks, you buy at that right time to catch that innovation wave.
Just hold on.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen it with 3D printing.
Right.
Admittedly, I don't think we've seen the end of that run because there's such a massive market to exploit there. But I mean, you've got those types of innovations. You're going to make a fortune if you catch them, right?
Right. Well, stick around. We will get into a little more detail or a little more in depth on some of the bigger innovators that are out right now, just as examples of the types of things to look for. Welcome back. You are listening to the Portfolio Doctors on ESPN 1700. Again, if you're a first-time listener and you want to listen to some of our past shows, you can go to our website, theportfoliodoctors.com. We've got them all archived there in a podcast. Makes it really easy to listen. And then also, if anything we talk about today, or if you do go back and listen to some of the shows and we talk about something that kind of triggers a thought in your head, you want more information about something or it a totally different topic, feel free to reach out to us, Dan@theportfoliodoctors.com or Steve@theportfoliodoctors.com. Today we've been talking about forecasting. Maybe it's because of the weather.
When I worked in over at Enron trying to fix them as a turnaround specialist, and then I was moved to Aquila Energy. Enron and Aquila were trading. They do a lot of gas and natural gas and those types of trading back and forth on the futures market, but they were also trading weather.
Okay.
Yeah, so here's what they did. They would have a geologist that would guess what the weather would be in like 6 months' time based on trends and patterns and that, and then they would wager based on the rainfall that would occur. If there was more rainfall than normal, then the owner of the hydroelectric dam could produce more electricity. So then they would sell the excess electricity to Enron, who would then be the loser.
Right.
And if there was less rainfall than predicted, then Enron would supply the hydroelectric dam customers with energy, and therefore the hydroelectric dam would owe their money. So they were trading rainfall based on geologists' predictions 6 months out. I mean, good luck with that.
So it's really hard to imagine why they're no longer in business.
Yeah, it isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That seems like a genius business plan.
Wagered a few hundred million on that.
That's it?
Yeah.
That's chump change.
Rounding error.
Yes. Okay. We brought up the topic of innovation and finding innovative ideas as investment opportunities.
I know. It's key. If you can jump on the bandwagon of an innovator early, and they can survive, because now, as you and I discussed, Dan, there's plenty of great companies that never make it to market or anywhere,
right,
because
great
the
products.
Management team just shoots them in the foot, or they're undercapitalized or whatever.
Or they just don't know how to execute the proper business plan, where they have the best widget ever invented and
yep.
it never even sees a shelf anywhere.
Exactly. I tell you right now, Microsoft was never the best widget, but they could got themselves to market, yeah. and look where they are now.
Right.
You know, Apple was the best widget for a while, but it's hard to remain the best widget forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just got to look, and there's a window of opportunity to jump onto the bandwagon. Sometimes it's quite an extended window, but I've seen over the years, as innovation has accelerated, that window of opportunity gets closed rather quickly these days.
Right.
I mean, you think back to the Fords and the railroads and that. Those guys enjoyed 10, 15, 20 years worth of bull market, you know. Nowadays.
Before a competitor even dented.
Well, it was so slow back then. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, you know, you get something up and running and you're lucky to get 3 to 4 years of an advantage over anybody else.
That the everything I've read and looked into as far as if you're innovative yourself and you have a product you want to bring to the market that you think can be very widely accepted, absolute best way to do it is build it up, get your inventories going as much as possible, flood the market, and sell the company as quick as possible.
To a big player, yeah, right.
Because a bigger company is just going to see what the product is and wipe it out in no time.
Yeah.
And if you think, oh, I'm going to hold on for the long run, you're going to be out of business very quickly.
No, absolutely. I was reading about a company here in San Diego, which, I mean, I just love this idea. He's got a computer that he's designed. Unlike your normal computers, and of course, I didn't bring the picture with me to show Dan or our audience who can't see it anyway. But ultimately, what he's done is instead of having the normal box of a computer, he's got it so that there's each of the different components you need. For example, you know, your video card and your memory and your hard drive and all of that stuff is it slots into a different slot. So essentially, it's just it's a circular thing that you just push these slots into, click it in.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can upgrade and change your computer just by removing a slot and pushing the new one in.
Putting a new latest and greatest technology.
So you don't have to always send this huge, great box back. That's number one. And number two, within 30 seconds, you've upgraded your computer and you've still got all of your data on there. You're still keeping everything you had before. Whereas nowadays, you've got to send your computer away and it's a big headache to load up all of your software again and get, you know, all of your licenses on there. Whereas this is, I mean, what a great idea from a normal product.
Now we'll just see if he's able to execute that and take on some of the big players.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, so, you know, but in that case, you've got to believe someone like Apple or Dell or, you know, is going to look at that and either come to him if they're honorable and say, we'd like to buy you. Mm-hmm. Or in the case, I met a guy who had just won $40 million from Ford Motor Company because he actually was the inventor of the intermittent wiper. And he had invented it and he had patented it and he took it to Ford to as, yeah, look, I've got an invention, pay me for my invention and we'll move on. And Ford looked at him and realized he didn't have anything. And they basically said the next set of Ford motor cars had the intermittent wiper without paying him. So he spent the next 10 years of his life basically ruining his life to a large degree. He got divorced. He lived in his car. I mean, he just spent everything he had on fighting this. Eventually won, got his $40 million bucks, but I mean, at such a huge cost where, why didn't they just step forward and just say, hey?
And that's the problem with the big companies. Is they know they've got the financial resources and they've got all the time in the world where an individual, they're very limited typically and they're going to run
and
out of money fast.
And that type of stuff drives me crazy. But, you know, hopefully if you get the right innovation and the right management team, which is a key ingredient, then you can actually really make a lot of money.
You've got to be able to execute that plan.
Yeah.
Another one we've talked about, I mean, Apple we've talked about over and over.
Yeah.
Steve Jobs seemed to be the big driver.
Yeah.
He was
– well, he's a marketing genius.
He was the innovator behind – and definitely all the engineers are still at Apple, or I would think they are.
A lot
of them, all the brain power is still there, but for some reason, Apple just isn't as interesting any longer.
No.
And it has to be – we've seen this in numerous occasions. Big, successful companies hire this real dynamic leader, and there's a wow factor. And he was that. There's one guy that I'm seeing pretty regularly pop up now that seems to be the new Steve Jobs, and that's Elon Musk with Tesla.
And he's a South African, unfortunately. I can't really back that up, you know. We get lucky every now and again.
Yeah. But he just seems to be on the cutting edge of so many things. It's not just this Tesla car. And this is not a pitch of any kind to say run out and buy Tesla.
Right.
I think it's pretty darn expensive right now. I don't know that you can justify that.
My word.
But just pay attention to what he's doing because he's working on a lot of projects that are going to make a big difference 5-10 years from now in probably everyone's life.
No, exactly. I mean, the one thing that you have to say about the guy, he really is out there. I mean, some of his ideas, like shooting people down a tube, you know, in terms of transportation.
Instead of the bullet train, I'll vote for that.
Yeah.
Today, tomorrow, and every day in the future.
No, agreed. But I'm just saying, I mean, it's hard to even imagine getting a little capsule and being shot down like they do in the banks, you know, when they shoot the tube of money over.
Costco, when it first opened, that was how they transmitted orders.
Oh,
there
you go.
One of those tubes right next to the register, and zoop, you'd see it go up into the ceiling, and then you'd see somebody way on the other side of the building take it and do something with it.
Can you imagine jumping in that tube and you being the guy shot over there? I mean, that would be pretty scary. But, I mean, the thing is that why I won't discount that as an idea is because he's got these wild ideas. Mm-hmm. He built a Tesla car around software rather than the other way around, and it worked, right?
And obviously he can execute a plan because
that's exactly where I was going. Yeah.
He took on one of the hardest industries to crack, and he's taken them on. And right now it looks like he's winning.
Well, he certainly is based on his stock price.
Well, that just about does it for today. Danny, great job again, as always. Thank you very much, Steve.
How come we always run out of time?
That's just how it is.
Oh, well.
Everyone be safe out there with this weather. The roads are always a little bit ridiculous here in San Diego. Be careful. Take your time getting home. Have a great weekend. Talk to you next week.
You've been listening to The Portfolio Doctors on ESPN 1700. To schedule a financial health check, go to theportfoliodoctors.com. Or to speak with Dan Osgood, Steve Bick, or any guests on this program, call 858-764-7250. That's 858-764-7250, or go online at theportfoliodoctors.com. That's theportfoliodoctors.com.
The portfolio doctors are Dan Osgood and Stephen Bick, who are investment advisor representatives of their respective registered investment advisor firms, ACAS LLC and Cottingham Management Company LLC. The opinions expressed by the portfolio doctors and guests on this radio show are their own and do not reflect the opinions of this radio station. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information presented is for educational purposes only. Moreover, no listener should assume that any discussions or information presented serves as the recipient of or a substitute for personalized advice from ACAS LLC, Cottingham Management LLC, or from any other investment professional and is not intended as an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. ACAS LLC and Cottingham Management LLC are not law or accounting firms, and no portion of this presentation should be interpreted as legal, accounting, or tax advice. Information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for any listener. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation.